Hi, you're listening to the EU China podcast powered by the EU China Hub, straight from Brussels, a show on which we interview important actors in the EU China relations and cover the top EU China news. Our mission is to help you to get a more nuanced picture of what is going on in the EU China relations. My name is Greg Stets, and I'm happy to have you with us. If you like our show, don't forget to subscribe and to tell your friends about us. Let's get started. Hi, here comes the EU China briefing for October 19th, 2020. In today's briefing, we cover off sanctions and export controls. EU gets tougher on China. MEPs take Huawei head on. The second wave disrupts EU leaders' meetings, including on China. Xi's southern tour, opening up or self-reliance. Romania chooses US over China on a major energy project as CEE case study. This recording is based on a briefing prepared by Flavien Berniaga and Grzegorz Stets. Enjoy! Of sanctions and export controls, EU gets tougher on China. The EU has been moving to target China with export controls on a variety of sensitive technologies and sanctions on imported aluminum and optical fiber cables. On October 15th, reports emerged stating that the EU is expected to publish a plan that would tighten export controls regulation for espionage and surveillance technology. According to reporting, the restrictions on tech exports in the new plan would primarily impact the so-called dual-use technologies, such as hacking software and facial recognition systems. The new regulation would allegedly allow companies to sell such sensitive tech only if they have a license to sell such products abroad, while member states would be required to maintain full transparency on the licenses they give away. This also implies that the EU will establish a list of technologies that fall under the jurisdiction of the law, applying extra pressure on member state governments to report their export data, an action they often did not undertake in the past, or did so without accuracy. However, it appears that under this regulation, the legal power to stop exports will reside with member states, which may allow untransparent governments to cover up improper exports done by companies under their tutelage. And this topic of bringing together tech, trade, and human rights issues has been ping-ponging between institutions for some years now. But the German presidency of the Council gave it impetus, arguing it wants the legislative file to be closed by the end of Berlin's time in the rotating chair, so in December. Now, a leading MEP working on the file, Markéta Gregorová, said the EU needs to, quote, make sure that authoritarian regimes such as China or Russia are not simply given the newest technology for our short-term profit. They have been shown to copy, steal, and use this technology against us and other democratic countries, end of quote. The concern in regard to sensitive technology is also likely linked to protest clampdowns in Hong Kong and political surveillance in Xinjiang, Tibet, and Inner Mongolia. Recall that in July, bans on exporting sensitive tech were a core component of the EU's response to the Hong Kong National Security Law. On October 17th, China took similar steps as the EU, as the National People's Congress Standing Committee passed a law that restricts exports of sensitive products and technologies that could have repercussions on national security. This allows it to provide a response to US decision on WeChat, Huawei, or ByteDance. Now, moving to sanctions. On October 13th, the EU announced that it will be placing provisional duties on Chinese exports accused of selling aluminum at overly low prices. The dumping complaint was made in February by the European Aluminium Consortium and resulted in duties ranging from 30.4% to 48%. The duties will apply at least until April 2021, when the investigation will be finalized. After that, the EU could apply duties for the upcoming 5 years. We know three of the companies affected: Guangdong Haomei New Materials, Guangdong King Metal Light Alloy Technology, and Press Metal International. In addition to these, other unspecified companies are also targeted. Moving to optic cables. In a low-key move in late September, the European Commission began an investigation into a potential case of dumping by Chinese exporters of core broadband gear. Specifically, the EU is looking into whether or not the low price of optical fiber cables imported from China pose a threat to competition within the EU optical fiber cable market, which is set to grow amid 5G rollouts. The investigation stems from an anti-dumping complaint raised by Europa Cable, an umbrella association for European producers including Prysmian, Nexans and Leoni. European optic fiber cable producers started being suspicious when they saw a 150% increase in optic fiber imports from China between 2016 and 2019. This allowed Chinese companies to muster 15% of the market. The optic fiber cable market is by no means small, amounting to 1 billion euros per year. With the coming of 5G technology, this market is also poised to go up. The EU now has 8 months to investigate the matter, after which it will decide if it will impose anti-dumping duties. But if it wants to apply the so-called definitive levies, which last for 5 years, the investigation will take a minimum of 14 months. Moving to the takeaway. What we can derive from these three cases is that the EU is moving ahead on putting up defenses against the uneven playing field with China. These measures are in line with the other recent decisions, such as the White Paper on Foreign Subsidies, which seeks to tackle distortions to critical sectors of the common market, or the tariffs slapped on indirect subsidies, which punish third countries going through intermediaries to deploy subsidies in the EU single market. On the other hand, limits on tech exports have a political nuance as well. They may pertain more to the EU's decision to pursue strategic autonomy by protecting its competitiveness in the tech sector, by retaining an edge in tech, and forming a move to protect EU values also abroad. MEPs take Huawei head-on. Last week, a fresh batch of bad signals were sent Huawei's way from the European Parliament and Slovakia, though the company's presence in the German 5G market could still be on the table. On October 14th, MEPs from 5 political groups signed a letter arguing that Huawei's proximity to the Chinese government makes it a high-risk vendor. The letter, signed by 41 MEPs, argues that there is, quote, no question that Huawei and ZTE are high-risk vendors whose technology in Europe's 5G network would constitute a security threat. The letter came ahead of the Transport, Telecommunications and Energy Council on October 15th, which brought together the EU27 ministers on these respective files. Some of the 41 signatories include prominent MEPs such as Reinhard Butikofer, Nathalie Loiseau, Radoslav Sikorski, and Miriam Lexman, and it addresses the commissioners for competition, internal market, and trade, respectively Margrethe Vestager, Thierry Breton, and Valdis Dombrovskis. The letter also decried that Huawei enjoys full and free operation in Europe, sometimes even benefiting from EU subsidies, urging the commissioners to allow, quote, no European funding to cover the use of technology from high-risk telecom equipment vendors, end of quote. The MEPs argue it is paradoxical to China's telecom market, where European providers such as Nokia and Ericsson have been left on the sidelines with limited market share. The MEPs also highlighted that Huawei is subjected to the laws of, quote, China's undemocratic authoritarian regime, end of quote, that seeks, quote, to control its own population and to spy on Western governments, companies, and citizens, end of quote. The letter ends by recommending that the Commission intensify assessment of high-risk vendors, balance the uneven playing field by approving the International Procurement Instrument, and push forward with policies restricting market access to companies that have received substantial state subsidies from their home countries. Now, moving to Slovakia. On October 14th, the Slovak government announced it will sign a joint declaration with the US on the security of 5G networks. The Slovak Ministry of Foreign Affairs indicated nonetheless that the joint declaration is based on security advice provided by the European Commission in the 5G toolbox. Slovakia thus stands to join other Central and Eastern European countries that have signed similar documents with the US. Czech Republic, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Romania and Slovenia. Even though the document is non-binding, it offers the Slovak government four screening criteria for high-risk providers. Lack of independent judicial review for a government control of supplier, ownership transparency, respect for IP rights, and ethical corporate behavior. These seem to be at least partially aimed at Chinese providers. Finally, the declaration urges a rigorous screening of FDI in critical infrastructure, which came about despite Slovakia's sluggish implementation of EU FDI investment screening standards. Moving to Germany. In Germany, the process of evaluation of the trustworthiness of 5G equipment providers that we informed you about in a recent briefing has encountered a bump in the road, as ministers and the chancellery now clash over key details for the assessment procedure. More specifically, the procedure to determine whether a provider should be classified as high risk will involve the chancellery and three German ministers of Economy, Interior and Foreign Relations. Following an initial assessment by the Federal Office for Information Security. Now, Chancellor Angela Merkel, Minister of Economy Peter Altmaier and Minister of Interior Horst Seehofer support a mechanism that would be based on a joint assessment that would require joint disapproval by the Chancellery and the ministries to exclude a provider, which is unlikely given anti-Huawei exclusion comments by Merkel and Altmaier. However, Foreign Minister Heiko Maas is allegedly against such a solution and has demanded the procedure to require an anonymous, active approval by all ministries involved to classify a 5G vendor as safe. Hence, Maas would effectively hold a veto power over the decision. As a result of this difference in opinion, Germany's 5G law will be further delayed, meaning it is not likely to be released until the first half of 2021. In the absence of a security check, Huawei's operations in Germany currently continue at the same pace as before, bolstering the company's position through facts on the ground. Moving to the takeaway. Sentiments on Huawei in Europe, probably save for German Chancellery and probably Hungary, seem to be clear, as we have shown in the previous weeks. This week, we would like to draw attention to one aspect of the MEP's letter, the International Procurement Instrument, which could be the next big thing after the FDI investment screening mechanism. Here is what we know and how it would work. The procurement instrument would serve to even out imbalances in procurement procedures, with particularly important effects on Chinese investments into Europe. It was first put to debate in 2012, when the EU realized it provided much more opportunities in public procurement, valued at around 352 billion euros, to other countries as part of the government procurement agreement. This is much more than other large economies, such as the US, 178 billion euros, Japan, 27 billion euros, not mentioning the relatively close China. However, the instrument was left to gather dust for many years, until 2019, when it gained salience once again in the context of an even playing field with China. How would it work? Not unlike the instrument on foreign subsidies, the procurement instrument allows the Commission to initiate a public investigation if a third country is believed to have discriminated against an EU company in a foreign procurement market. If discrimination is indeed proved, the Commission can invite the country in question to consultations on the level of openness of its procurement market. Based on the outcome of the consultations, the Commission can then discuss with member states and apply price penalties to bids from the targeted country. This instrument is currently still in the works. However, if you're interested in more details about this topic, we strongly suggest a report by MEP Daniel Caspari on this very topic a link to which you can find on our website. The second wave disrupts EU leaders' meetings, including on China. An upcoming EU27 leaders' summit on China that was expected to be held in Berlin has been cancelled amid a growing second wave of COVID-19 across Europe. On October 16, Angela Merkel announced the EU27, quote-unquote, will have to do without, a summit focused on EU-China relations originally scheduled for November 16. Recall that the summit was planned in a special European Council on October 1st to 2nd, when leaders agreed to meet so that they could comprise a coherent common response to China. Such a meeting is absolutely essential for the EU to fix remaining internal disagreements before a summit between EU27 and Xi Jinping. Recall that this summit is expected to take place in Brussels in 2021, although an exact date is yet to be determined. But making the summits happen may become harder and harder amid the second wave. With some EU27 heads having possibly entered contact with individuals carrying the virus, the format of European Council summits could switch back to video conference as it was in April. On October 16, Charles Michel said the leaders will, quote, decide on the wisest way to proceed and organize our meetings to ensure that the European institutions can function but guarantee, as far as possible, everyone's safety, end of quote. His statement came after a European Council on October 15 to 16, which focused primarily on Brexit negotiations, the EU's 2050 pledge for carbon neutrality, and external relations with Africa, Belarus, and Turkey. China was not mentioned. In the context of the summit, three EU leaders were directly affected by COVID exposure. President of the European Commission Ursula von der Leyen entered self-isolation just minutes before a briefing on Brexit. Finnish Prime Minister Sanna Marin entered self-isolation on the second day of the summit after coming into contact with an infected Finnish MP ahead of the summit. Polish Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki did not come to Brussels at all. He remained in Warsaw following news of infection risk. The principle of sending European councils back to remote bases is fairly grounded. The effects of a super spreader at a European Council summit could endanger the health of all EU leaders at a time when leadership is most needed, both in the capitals and in Brussels. Now, notably in the context of virus risks, on October 13th, the Council of the EU adopted a common criteria on travel measures to minimize disrupting freedom of travel within the Schengen zone while maintaining safety from a health perspective. The criteria is split into three categories: testing rate, testing positivity rate, and 14-day cumulative cases. This data will be fed from national governments to the European Centre for Disease Prevention and Control, which will then compile a weekly color-coded map that will lay out risk levels in each EU region. Areas will be split into green, orange, and red. It will be forbidden to restrict travel between green areas. For travel between orange and red regions, entry will not be restricted, but authorities will have the power to ask travelers to self-isolate or to get tested upon arrival. And for you to know, red indicates regions with more than 50 new infections per 100,000 incidents and with test positivity over 4% in the previous 14 days. If you're interested in seeing the full color-coded map region by region, you can find a link to it on our website. Moving to the takeaway. The cancellation of the Leaders' Summit on China is unfortunate. The last European Council saw the EU27 gain traction on speaking with one voice on China, and another summit in such a short interval would have helped further establish that cohesion. Of course, outlooks on China do not change simply because leaders stay at home, but at least one other summit is necessary before they meet with Xi Jinping. Outside of China talk, the wider problem here is that online communication doesn't quite cut it. The whole purpose of a European Council is to have the most powerful women and men in Europe sitting down and sorting out what is and what is not an area of compromise. Sometimes that compromise is not achieved at the roundtable, but during lunch or a coffee break. The irreplaceable trust element of seeing one another face to face is diluted through a video conference, which both makes coordination more difficult and adds significant cybersecurity challenges. Xi's southern tour, opening up or self-reliance. On October 12th, Xi Jinping started a tour of Guangdong province in southern China, reminiscent of a similar tour by Deng Xiaoping in 1992. Xi visited Shantou and Chaozhou in eastern Guangdong, moving afterwards to Shenzhen to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the Shenzhen Special Economic Zone. In his Shenzhen speech, Xi said China will continue to open up to the global market and has tasked Shenzhen to, quote, plan innovation chains around its industries and plan its industries around innovation chains, end of quote. Among other deliverables, he said he expects Shenzhen to bring about, quote, another miracle, end of quote, by delivering sustainable growth, pursuing capital market reform, and attracting more foreign and domestic talents. To accomplish this, Shenzhen will be given greater autonomy to implement reforms without the need for approval from Beijing, with the hope that the beneficial final results could be implemented in other parts of China. Specifically, the new regulation gives the city decision-making powers on land use, hiring global talents, and developing the digital yuan, among other things. However, the reform falls short of the expectation to allow the free flow of information or money. Now, Xi also met with local leaders from poorer cities in the so-called Greater Bay Area, thus sending a message that the eastern extremities of the province are also part of the development plan. Now, to quickly recap, the Greater Bay Area is a project launched in February 2019 meant to connect the most essential economic cities in Guangdong, Guangzhou, Shenzhen, Foshan, Dongguan, and others, with Hong Kong and Macau, thus creating a megacity and an economic powerhouse connected to all parts of the region. To put this in perspective, the Greater Bay Area is currently home to 70 million people, 12% of China's GDP, and 3 of the world's top 10 container ports. Slightly oversimplifying, under Greater Bay Area plans, Hong Kong would become a green bond market hub, Macau would become an entertainment hub, Guangzhou a transport hub, and Shenzhen a high-tech hub. The plans would also mean that Hong Kong becomes more integrated with Shenzhen, as the latter's economic boost has come to challenge the former's status as a financial hub. The spurring of the digital currency in Shenzhen is also meant to trigger more competition from Hong Kong to retain its financial status. Shenzhen's enhanced powers may also be meant to portray how traditional governance on the mainland results in better outcomes than the governance of one country, two systems used in Hong Kong, at the same time attracting more young Hong Kongers to work on the mainland. Now, in his speeches, Xi made sure to mention the so-called drastic changes in the world, signaling that increased powers of Shenzhen are part of the wider plan to increase the resilience of the Chinese economy and reduce dependence on external providers. The focus on innovation and high tech mirrors Beijing's worries about US tech protectionism. The new tech export controls planned by the EU, which we covered in a previous news bite, can further add to Beijing's uneasiness and its intent to increase domestic capabilities. Although Xi did not explicitly mention US sanctions, he decried, quote, protectionism, unilateralism, economic downturn, and a drastic shrinking of international trade and investment, end of quote. This came just weeks before the fifth plenum, which will see the CCP discuss the economic strategy of the 14th five-year plan, the focus of which is expected to be on spurring domestic demand and a dual circulation economy. When talking of the wider context, we should also note Xi's message to the Navy in Shantou to, quote, raise training standards and combat ability, end of quote, and focus their, quote, minds and energy on preparing to go to war, end of quote. The statement was understood to have an implied connotation for Taiwan, which became targeted by even more fierce rhetoric from the mainland after reports that Taiwan was considering purchasing new weapons from the US. Moving to the takeaway. There were many non-coincidental connotations to Deng's southern trip in Xi's tour, including Xi presenting flowers in front of Deng's statue. Deng's trip put economic reform and opening up back on track in 1992 after international uproar over his decision to send tanks to Tiananmen Square in 1989. However, Xi's trip may be more about self-reliance and closing the ranks than the earlier southern tour. First and foremost, Xi told the crowd in Shenzhen that the city must spearhead China's process of becoming more self-reliant, meaning less dependent on external actors. This is understandable given the US sanctions and the EU's plans to control tech exports to China. Xi's comments strengthen the expectation that dual circulation will be at the core of the next five-year plan. Secondly, regarding the Greater Bay Area, the plan itself is enormous, and the fact that poorer regions also stand to benefit is commendable. That being said, the Greater Bay Area also serves the goal of mainlandizing Hong Kong and closing ranks around it. Closer economic integration will bring the benefit of enhanced ease of doing business, but it will also result in political alignment and a further dilution of the one country, two systems. And to that end, it is worth noting that Carrie Lam decided to postpone a policy address in Hong Kong on October 14th so that she could join Xi in Shenzhen. Finally, we suggest keeping an eye on the mainland's actions on Taiwan. Threats have become more obvious, potentially signifying that a messy election in the US could be enough for China to make a move. But the move does not necessarily mean an invasion of Taiwan itself. That would likely be too risky, but perhaps of some smaller islands under Taipei's territory, which could lead to a fourth Taiwan Strait crisis. The EU would be wise to discuss in advance how it could potentially react to such a turn of events. Romania chooses US over China on major energy project, a Central and Eastern European case study. On October 9th, the Romanian government signed an accord with the US, which includes an investment from Washington to build and recondition the Cernavoda nuclear power plant. The Cernavoda nuclear power plant is majority owned, 82.4%, by Nuclear Electrica, a Romanian SOE. It currently uses only two of its five available reactors, generating around 20% of Romania's energy production. The story of this project shows the challenging position of China in Central and Eastern Europe. Back in 2009, a joint venture involving a number of foreign companies such as RWE, GDF Suez, ArcelorMittal and Iberdrola was set up to build the other three reactors, but all partners gradually left the deal within 3 years. At the 16+1 summit in 2013, the Romanian government signed an intention letter with China General Nuclear Power to develop two other units for an estimated cost of $8 billion. CGN won the procurement tender as the sole competitor. It was the only company interested. The negotiations did not go smoothly. Between the signing of a memorandum in 2015 and setting up the joint venture in 2019, three factors contributed to stalling of the negotiations process. Domestic politics. Between 2013 and 2020, Romania had six prime ministers and nine governments, making it impossible to streamline a single negotiation strategy with CGN. Another problem was CGN's position. The company wanted a promise that if the market price dropped under a determined threshold, Bucharest would have to pay the difference, and the Romanian government did not agree. Finally, another part was external pressures. As Romania was further disincentivized to push forward with negotiations by EU regulations on state subsidies, as well as tensions between Washington and Beijing. In November 2019, a new center-right government had less tolerance for state subsidies and sought better relations with Washington. As a result, the deal with CGN was dropped in June 2020. On October 16, Romanian Energy Minister Virgil Popescu met with his US counterpart and US Exim Bank president to sign a memorandum pledging $8 billion US in US investments towards the building of reactors 3 and 4 and reconditioning of reactor 1. Popescu was not the only minister visiting Washington last week. According to US Ambassador to Romania, Adrian Zuckerman, the Romanian Defense Minister, Nicolae Ciuca, was also meeting his US counterpart, Mark Esper, to sign a bilateral agreement on security cooperation until 2030, and Romanian Minister of Foreign Affairs, Bogdan Aurescu, will be visiting Washington next Monday. Now, this specific case shows us some wider tendencies. In general, in the past years, Romania has taken steps showing that it values ties with Washington much more than those with Beijing. From the get-go of the 16+1, now 17+1, Romania did not always display interest in the format either. To that end, in 2015, 17 and 18, the Romanian side did not consider the format important enough to actually send the prime minister to the summits. In August 2019, Romania and the US signed a memorandum of understanding on 5G technologies. The document did not name Huawei, but Romanian President Klaus Iohannis said at the time that it will help to clarify criteria on transparency and compatibility with the rule of law. Furthermore, it should be noted that Romania has a 20-year-old strategic partnership with the US that has helped it enter NATO and build a US military base and missile defense shield on Romanian soil with US support. Now, taking an even wider picture, Bucharest's skepticism on China is proof of the wider belief in Central and Eastern Europe that, given unsatisfactory outcomes of engagement with China in recent years, it is sensible to sacrifice relations with Beijing for other gains, for example, vis-à-vis the US. This has partially resulted from disillusionment with China, as its infrastructure proposals often are unattractive to the Central and Eastern European countries or clash with the EU norms. It has also resulted from US pressure, which, though it began late, has focused steadily since 2018 on distancing Central and Eastern Europe from Beijing. On 5G, too, Central and Eastern European countries, such as the Czech Republic, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Romania, Slovenia, Slovakia, signed, one after another, joint declarations or memorandums of understanding with the US on 5G. Similarly, Mike Pompeo relied heavily on partners in the Central and Eastern Europe to garner support for the US agenda captured in his speech on, quote, communist China and the free world's future, end of quote. Further proofs of this disengagement between Central and Eastern Europe and China could be seen in the visit of the Czech Senate leader to Taiwan, in Estonia's refusal of Chinese cash for an infrastructure project, or Slovakia's anti-Huawei rhetoric. Similarly, we should note the US involvement in the 3Cs initiative, which seeks to increase connectivity within the Central and Eastern European region. It is particularly noteworthy as the most recent summit of the 3Cs initiative took place on October 19th in Estonia. For more details on this initiative, we recommend a report by the Polish Economic Institute, among the authors of which you can find our recent podcast guest, Jakub Jakubowski, with whom we talked about connectivity in Central and Eastern Europe and the geopolitics of it. You can find the links to the report and to the interview on our website. Moving to the takeaway. The case study of Czernowoda can serve as an example of a wider trend in relations with China across the Central and Eastern European region. After initial interest in the 16+1 initiative and the willingness to explore the possibility of attracting investment inflow from China, many Central and Eastern European countries, like Romania, have found that memoranda signed and visits made to both Beijing and 16+1 summits have not translated into the economic results they had hoped for. In a time of increasing rivalry between the US and China, senior European tensions, and given the intent to secure US support amid growing Russian activity, the Central and Eastern European countries have been open to sacrificing ties with Beijing for other purposes. In this backdrop, we're seeing the diminishment, though not dissolution, of the 17 plus 1. As of now, the next summit remains unscheduled. And in a world where the EU-China summit, European councils, and the United Nations General Assembly have been turned into video conferences, this silence about the China Central and Eastern European summit is noteworthy. Does this mean that the 17 plus 1 is dead? Not really. Its umbrella format still allows local-level projects, such as between cities or regions, to operate. But it seems clear that we will not see Central and Eastern European leaders as excited about China as they were when the format was starting. And that's it for this week's briefing. See you next time. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the EU-China podcast. If you want to know more or to get in touch with us, visit our website, which is euchinahub.com. And if you find this show insightful, be sure to leave us a review on your podcast platform of choice. It will help others to get to know about us. See you next time.